Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I am your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, and the man who calls everything right down the middle, Dion Tyrae Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. Week 9 of the NFL football season. Let's talk about it. Let's get right into it. Now, the 49ers didn't play. Anybody and everybody who listens to this podcast knows that the 49ers are my favorite football team. Numerous podcasts have talked about the 49ers, the subject of many podcasts. They didn't play this week, bye week, and a much-needed bye week for the 49ers, coming off a three-game losing streak, an embarrassing performance at home against Cincinnati, 31-17 loss, ugly performance, Brock Purdy, multiple turnovers, some baffling, head-scratching decisions by Brock Purdy. Running game completely lifeless. No Trent Williams, no Deebo Samuel. The running game, as a result, garbage. The pass rush on defense, similar to my biological father, non-existent, absent. Haven't seen it. Where is it at this season? Where is the pass rush this season for the San Francisco 49ers? Now, some people might say, well, they're getting a lot of pressures. Pressures don't mean anything. That means you're getting close. You're not actually finishing the play and getting a sack. You're not putting the quarterback on the ground. I don't care about pressures. I don't care about getting close. I don't care about almost making the play. It's no different than taking a woman home or talking to a female and you almost fucked her. You held hands with her. You took her out to dinner. She even went as far as liking one of your Facebook photos and you took that as, oh, she likes me. No. She has no interest in you. She does not give two shits, a rat's ass, or a flying fuck about you. She's just being nice to you. It doesn't mean anything. You didn't actually fuck her. You did not seal the deal. That is how I look at pressures, even being a stat. I swear to God, I never heard anyone talk about quarterback pressures or kept track of that 10, 15 years ago. Growing up watching football, I never heard anyone talk about quarterback pressures. You know what people talk about? Quarterback sacks. Get the quarterback on the ground, put fear in the quarterback's heart, instill a sense and an air of intimidation into the quarterback's mind. But if the quarterback is sitting back in the pocket, chilling out, maxing, relaxing all cool, shooting some b-ball after school, not worried about the couple of guys up to no good who started making trouble in the neighborhood, he's not going to be concerned about quarterback pressures. He can still sit in the pocket, go through progressions, and pick apart the defense and make plays. And that's exactly what P.J. Walker did to the 49ers, Kirk Cousins, and Joe Burrow. Good Lord. I thought Joe Burrow was hurt. I thought he had a bad calf. He picked the 49er games to get healthy. He completely destroyed the 49ers last week. Kicked our ass. That was Joe Burrow. That was the real Joe Burrow. You really haven't seen it this season that much because of the calf injury suffered in training camp. But against the 49ers in week 8, last week in Santa Clara at Levi's, that was Joe Burrow, and he completely annihilated the 49ers. And he sat back in the pocket, largely undeterred. Pressures, guys getting close, almost sacked him, didn't actually get the job done. The 49er pass rush this season has been a complete embarrassment. So the 49ers, and John Lynch in particular, made a move last Tuesday before the trade deadline to bolster the pass rush and acquire the services of Chase Young, young defensive end for the Washington Commanders, been in the NFL since 2020, played his college football at The Ohio State University, born and raised in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. A good Maryland boy such as myself. Chase Young, now officially a San Francisco 49er. 5 sacks this season in 7 games. Pretty impressive. The 49ers, as previously mentioned, have struggled this season in the pass rush. As a matter of fact, Chase Young by himself has 5 sacks. 5 men that play for the 49ers combined have 5.5 sacks. Cleveland Farrell, Randy Gregory, who was also a recent trade acquisition a couple of weeks ago, Drake Jackson, who has 3. He had 3 in one game. Opening day against Pittsburgh, first game of the season, Drake Jackson had 3 sacks. And since then, he's been quieter than a mouse pissing on cotton. Hasn't done a goddamn thing ever since. But Drake Jackson, Cleveland Farrell, Randy Gregory, and Kerry Hyder Jr. have combined for 5.5 sacks. Opposite of Nick Bosa, who so far this season has not looked like Nick Bosa. He does not look like the reigning, conquering, defending defensive player of the year, which he was a season ago. 18 and a half sacks last season for Nick Bosa. Currently, right now, Nick Bosa has uno, dos, tres, three sacks. Three sacks for a guy that last season had 18 and a half. And he got paid, and he got rewarded, and justifiably so, rightfully so. He deserves that money. He earned that money. He has been awesome so far for the San Francisco 49ers ever since he was drafted in 2019. The fortunes of the franchise dramatically changed once Nick Bosa was drafted. He is the reason the 49ers, the biggest reason why San Francisco has won so many games over the years. I give Nick Bosa a lot of credit, but at the same time, when you're not currently playing well, when you're not playing to your own standard, it has to be called out. Three sacks in eight games, unacceptable. The 49er pass rush doesn't exist. And that's why the trade for Chase Young was a welcome trade, a welcome addition. We need more help up front. Pass rush. This is a quarterback's league. It's an offensively driven league. Everything centers and revolves around the quarterback in the passing game. You got to have a great quarterback of your own, and you also, at the same time, got to be able to go get the other team's quarterback and put him on the ground. I don't care about pressures. Do not talk to me about quarterback pressures. Talk about quarterback sacks, quarterback hits. How many times in the past three games have you seen any of the opposing quarterbacks versus San Francisco, PJ Walker, Kirk Cousins, Joe Burrow, have to be helped up off the ground and dig out patches of grass out their face mask? Zero, because they're under no real pressure. You think about the last two times the 49ers played in the Super Bowl and unfortunately lost. Super Bowl 47 and especially Super Bowl 54 in 2019. At the center of the 49ers' success in those respective seasons, an elite, dominant, ferocious, intimidating, homicidal almost pass rush. You got to have that. In 2019, you had a rookie Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, who led the team in sacks that season, D Ford, a four-man rush, creates pressure, don't have to blitz, drop seven back in coverage, cause havoc, wreak havoc, create turnovers, anarchy, mayhem. Completely fuck up and befuddle the opposing offense by getting their quarterback on the ground, creating real legitimate pressure, hitting the quarterback. That's what we did in 2019, and it resulted in a Super Bowl appearance. This season, when you're talking about this paltry, pathetic, anemic 49er pass rush, this is not the recipe for getting back to the Super Bowl. So the addition of Chase Young, I'm here for it. I'm very much here for it. Good football player. Has unfortunately battled injuries the past couple of years, and that's why his production is not up to his – it doesn't match his talent. The production does not match his talent. But you go back to his rookie season, 7.5 sacks in 2020. 2021 suffers a knee injury, torn ACL against Tampa, out for the rest of that season, out for the majority of last season. Even when he came back – not really 100%. Still trying to get a feel for the game, get acclimated again, get comfortable, develop and build trust in his body again, in his knee, and try to get, like I said, comfortable playing football again. So kind of a feeling out process last season. But this season, he's come in 5 sacks, 7 games. He appears to be back to playing to his own standard, to being the real Chase Young. So I'm happy about it. I can't wait to see him on the field this Sunday against Jacksonville. I can't wait to see what this new look, revamped 49er pass rush looks like. Speaking of the 49er defense, the much maligned Steve Wilks, defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, under siege. He is the center of 49er fan vitriol. So many Niner fans hate this dude. They're talking about the defense is taking a step back. It's not like it was last season under D'Amico Ryans or in 2019 or years past under Robert Saleh. And that's true. The defense is not as good as it was in previous years, especially during the 3-game losing streak. But I will say this. Everybody killing Steve Wilks for the defense taking a step back and not being as good as it has been in recent years. But the 49er offense has scored 17 points in 3 consecutive games. All 3 games. Cleveland, Minnesota, Cincinnati, 17, 17, 17. The head coach, Kyle Shanahan, is supposed to be an offensive genius, a quarterback guru, a football savant, the smartest guy in the room. Just ask him. And he said during the offseason, he made this statement, a bold statement. He said Brock Purdy, the quarterback of the 49ers, the quarterback that he chose over Trey Lance, Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo, Brock Purdy is the real deal. You've never heard an endorsement such as that from Kyle Michael Shanahan. He usually does not publicly celebrate his own quarterbacks in that fashion. But he came out and told the media that Brock Purdy is the real deal. Okay, Kyle, with that being said, with that being known and understood, you're the head coach, also the play caller. This is your offense. And you said that the current quarterback is the real deal. So apparently you found your guy. I understand Debo and Trent are not playing, and they are a large part of what the 49ers do on offense, especially in the running game. When 71 and 19 are not on the field, their presence is largely missed. And the offense has not been the same in the last three games, but you still got Ayuk. You still got Christian McCaffrey. You still got George Kittle. You still have some people that can do some things and put points on the board. More than 17, but the last three games has not been the case. And something's got to change, namely Debo coming back. He practiced today, as a matter of fact. He should play this Sunday against Jacksonville. Trent Williams did not practice today. He was on the sideline doing drills or different activities or calisthenics or whatever the fuck he was doing. He wasn't practicing, but he was on the field, off to the side, trying to get the feel back for himself, trying to get healthy, I guess, whatever you want to call it. But not actively practicing. But still, we need those guys. And it can't be understated how important, how relevant to the 49ers' fortunes and the 49er offense that Trent Williams and Debo Samuel are to that equation. But still, even without them being out there, I still expect the offense to score more than 17 points. So everybody killing Wilkes, even though we lost 19-17 to Cleveland, 23-17 to Minnesota. Now, we lost 31-17 to Cincinnati. But two of those games, you could have and should have scored more than 19 or 23 points to win both of those games. Even the Cincinnati game, that was a close game into the third quarter, going into the fourth, late in the third quarter. But then Brock Purdy had an inexplicably horrendous interception he threw. Just awful. And that kind of opened the floodgates. That was the end of the game. And then he followed that up after a Bengals touchdown with another pick. The game was over. So Brock Purdy in the fourth quarter, late in the game, and this has kind of been a trend in recent weeks. You know, Brock is going to play pretty good for the first half, 2.5 good quarters of football. But then as the game wears on, especially in the fourth quarter, just doesn't have it. Cleveland, it was kind of like that. Even though he did put Jake Moody in position to win the game with a game-winning field goal that he missed, he was still off the majority of the fourth quarter. Minnesota on Monday night, same thing, way off in the fourth quarter of that football game. You can say he may or may not have had a concussion, and that was the reason for his inaccuracy. Cincinnati game, just poor decisions, inaccurate throws, just not playing good football. And a lot of people are saying, has the clock struck midnight on Brock Purdy? Has Cinderella turned into a pumpkin or whatever the case may be? Is Brock Purdy finally come back down to earth and showing everybody why he was the literal last pick in the NFL draft, Mr. Irrelevant? Has Brock Purdy finally been figured out? Is Brock Purdy just a football version of Jeremy Lin? And, you know, Jeremy Lin was doing awesome for like a month. Then the Knicks played the Miami Heat, and Dwayne Wade, Mario Chalmers, LeBron James locked him up. They took it personal. They destroyed Jeremy Lin in that game, and Jeremy Lin was never the same again after that. Has the football equivalent of that happened to Brock Purdy? I don't think that's necessarily the case, because I can't overlook the first five games where he played outstanding football, clean football for the most part. But the past three games, you're talking about five picks, three touchdowns. Has it been good? I'm not ready to say he's been figured out. He's Jeremy Lin. The league has caught up to him. His deficiencies are starting to show. I'm not ready to 100% say that. I said this before about Purdy. I don't think he's top 10 in the NFL. Hell no. I don't look at Brock Purdy as being a top 10 quarterback in pro football. But at the same time, I don't think he's the drizzling shits. I think he's somewhere in the middle. I think he's a top 15 NFL quarterback. I think it's okay to say that. Truthfully, there really aren't that many good quarterbacks currently active in the NFL. I think Brock Purdy, I think it's okay to say a top 15 quarterback currently in the NFL. That's okay. That's where he's at right now. I look at Brock Purdy as being a modern, new age, up-to-date version of Jeff Garcia from back in the day, former 49er quarterback in the 2000s. A lot of similar traits, like smaller guys, but shifty, more athletic than you would think. Because one thing I'll say about Purdy the past couple of games, he's made a lot of plays with his legs and shown mobility to get out the pocket, to escape treacherous situations, scramble for a first down, extend drives. Like, he's shown that ability the past couple of weeks. It's just taking care of the football and not turning the ball over and poor decisions and inaccurate throws. But Purdy, he's top 15. I don't think he sucks. At the same time, I don't think he's the next Tom Brady, the next Joe Montana, as some 49er fans said out loud. I heard that from Niner fans. Brock Purdy is our version of Tom Brady. I don't know. Pump the brakes on that. I think he's our version of Jeff Garcia, the newer, up-to-date version of that. That's fine. Jeff Garcia was a very good NFL quarterback. I was a huge fan of Garcia growing up. Jeff and T.O., Steve Mariucci on the sidelines, we won a lot of football games with that equation, made the playoffs. That's okay. And the roster back then was nowhere close to being what the roster is right now on both sides of the football. So if we can get 2002 Jeff Garcia from Brock Purdy, that's fine. We can make the playoffs, win our division, potentially get to a Super Bowl as long as that pass rush gets back on point and can recreate the magic and replicate what they did in 2019. The pass rush and the defense is the biggest thing. I don't think it has anything to do with Wilkes being in the booth or being on the sideline. The only thing I'll say about Wilkes is he does need to make some adjustments as the game goes along. Some more creativity up front. Run some more stunts. It seems like it's a lot of straight four-man rushes, or he'll bring blitzes and leave guys wide-ass open in the back end or whatever. I don't think it's big adjustments that has to be made, though. I think it's a lot of little things that hopefully are being cleaned up during the bye week, and you'll see it this Sunday against Jacksonville, a good football team. The Jaguars are no joke. That's a quality football team. First place in their division, won a lot of games so far, I think 5-2, 6-2, something like that. It's a good football team on both sides. Jacksonville currently leads the NFL with 17 turnovers forced on defense. So Brock Purdy and all these turnovers and mistakes and poor decisions got to get cleaned up before this Sunday, because Jacksonville has a ball-hawking defense, and they get after it. And it's going to be in Jacksonville. It's going to be a tough game. And they also had a bye week this week. So you're talking about two teams coming out of a bye, two good football teams. It should be a hell of a game. But to get back to Chase Young, that trade, that acquisition, very much in favor of that, very supportive of that, a fan of bringing in Chase Young, looking forward to seeing what he does, wearing that glorious garnet and gold of my beloved San Francisco 49ers. Now let's move on to the teams that did play this week. I want to start in Las Vegas, and we got to start once again retroactively with some news that happened last week. Josh McDaniels fired by Mark Davis, the owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, relieved of his duties, terminated, asked to step down. Get the fuck out of here. Clean out your office, clean out your desk, and move expeditiously. Your services are no longer needed here, my friend. And the same thing could kind of be said for my old friend, my buddy, my pal, my favorite football player, the greatest quarterback of all time, the man, the myth, the legend, Lee Harvey Garoppolo, Jimmy Wilkes Booth, Jacoby Brissett with privilege, overpaid Trevor Siemian, James Richard Garoppolo, benched in Las Vegas. Whoa, that's earth-shattering news. That's big deal right there. Benched in favor of rookie quarterback Aiden O'Connell. Jimmy Garoppolo this season in 7 games played, through 9 interceptions. He leads the NFL in picks despite only playing about 6 or 7 games. I was told this guy was a great quarterback. That's what I was told for so many years. I was told if he can just escape Kyle Shanahan, the restrictions of Kyle Shanahan, and have some freedom in his ability to play quarterback, play in an offense he's comfortable and familiar with, I was told that we would see the real Jimmy Garoppolo this season. We're going to see Jimmy thrive and flourish. The Jimmy you saw for a couple of games in New England and sometimes in San Francisco, mainly in 2019, that Saints game in 2019 will forever live in 49er lore, the greatest football game of all time. All you got to do is ask any Jimmy Garoppolo fan slash apologist, and they will tell you that 2019 game against New Orleans in the Superdome was the greatest football game ever played. I was told that Jimmy Garoppolo I saw that day was going to play quarterback for the Las Vegas Raiders every game, have a kick-ass offense, surrounded by a litany of weapons. He has Davante Adams. You got Davante Adams, a top five receiver in the National Football League. Hunter Renfro is no slouch. Renfro is a route-running monster. I'm being serious. I was hoping that the 49ers would make a deal to bring him in before the trade deadline came and went. We could use him, put him in the slot. As I said, a route-running monster. A very underrated football player is Hunter Renfro. He's in his mid-20s. He appears to be about 48, but still, who cares about the looks? He's a good football player. And you got Josh Jacobs in the backfield. Jimmy, you got weapons, dude. You're surrounded by a plethora of good football players, and what do? You go out there on a weekly, consistent basis and stink up the joint. 9 picks in 7 games. That's incredible. And the Raiders offense, under the stewardship of James Richard Garoppolo, my favorite quarterback, never once scored more than 20 points in a football game this season. All those weapons, offense you're comfortable and familiar in. The Patriot way, the Patriot system, right? McDaniels and Garoppolo, former Patriots. Patriot West out there in Las Vegas, it didn't work. It didn't pan out the way they thought it was going to pan out. In my opinion, it was never going to work. You put together the most overrated coach in the NFL, a guy that's never won anything, a complete disaster in Denver, got the job in Indianapolis, and then backed away, turned it down, did not accept the job, went back to New England, inexplicably gets hired again. He gets a third chance in the National Football League. Some people don't even get 2 chances. Some people don't even get 1. Josh McDaniels got 3 chances, and he struck out. 3 strikes. I remember talking about Eric Bieniemy during the preseason, offseason, or whatever, for the past couple of years, really. And I said that Eric Bieniemy, in my opinion, should be a head coach in the National Football League. We're talking about a guy that was an offensive coordinator for 3 teams that got to the Super Bowl and won 2 of them, and he still was not a head coach. He's in Washington as an offensive coordinator. You can say what you want about the Commanders this season. Their offense, for the most part, has been pretty good. They've scored points. Sam Howell does turn the ball over a lot. He has a propensity for making mistakes. He's a young quarterback, growing and developing and learning. The Commanders' offense has been pretty good, and Eric Bieniemy, in my opinion, a long time ago, should have been a head coach in the National Football League. But when I say that, people tell me, well, the only reason he has success is because of Andy Reid. He's got Patrick Mahomes. He's not that good. He doesn't even call plays. Anything to minimize and marginalize the talent and the exploits of a black man. Go ahead and say it honestly. I don't care. This is my podcast. Y'all know how I get down. The connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, and the man who calls everything right down the middle, and I'm calling this right down the middle, Eric Bieniemy was discriminated against and the subject of a smear campaign, complete bullshit, how he's not a head coach in the National Football League. But if people are going to hold that against him and say the only reason you had success is because of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, how come no one said the same thing about Josh McDaniels? How come no one ever looked at him and said, well, you had Bill Belichick and you had Tom fucking Brady. Of course you had a good offense. You had the greatest quarterback of all time. It's held against Bieniemy that he had Patrick Mahomes. It's held against Bieniemy that he had Andy Reid. How come it's never held against Josh McDaniels that he had arguably the greatest head coach of all time and inarguably the greatest quarterback who ever played football? That's the only reason why Josh McDaniels ever looked competent in the National Football League. Take away Bill Belichick, take away Tom Brady, and what do you have? This guy chose Tim Tebow and Kyle Orton to be his quarterbacks when he was in Denver. Then gets a second or third chance in Las Vegas and hitches his wagon to Jimmy Garoppolo, the loathsome, detestable, depressingly mediocre Jimmy Garoppolo. He thought Jimmy was going to work for him. Did not work. You lost your job. You're fired now. And Jimmy got benched for Aiden O'Connell. And what do you know? The Raiders won the game this week against New York, against a horrible New York Giants football team. But still, the Raiders scored 30 points this week. As I said earlier, under Garoppolo, with him under center, they never once broke 20 points this season. Even in games they won, they didn't score more than 20. Take away McDaniels, take away Garoppolo. All of a sudden, instantly, they score 30 points. How's that work? Congratulations to interim head coach Antonio Pierce, promoted in the wake of the McDaniels firing. Funny story about that I heard this past week was Antonio Pierce was giving a speech to the team and talking about how, you know, any given Sunday and be at your best, and even when people are doubting you and counting you out, you can still win. And apparently he referenced Super Bowl 42 in 2007 when the New York Giants, a team that Antonio Pierce played for, he was a member of that football team, beat the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 42, upset a then undefeated football team. They were 18-0 rolling into Super Bowl 42, and that one loss they took that entire season came courtesy of Antonio Pierce's New York Giants in the Super Bowl. And he's telling that story to the guys on the Raiders roster. And apparently Josh McDaniels was irritated about that. He was miffed about that. Had his panties in a bunch. Did not like that. Because McDaniels is still mentally a New England Patriot. And apparently he pulled Antonio Pierce aside after that meeting and said, "Don't talk about the Patriots. Do not criticize the New England Patriots." Well, I'll say this about New England, and I'll say this about Belichick and Belichick's coaching tree. That tree ain't got no leaves on it. That tree needs some more water. That tree is about to fall down. You're talking about McDaniels, Matt Patricia, Brian Flores, Eric Mangini, Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel. You can go all the way back to those guys. Former assistants of Bill Belichick, guys that were affiliated with that Patriots organization that got head coaching jobs, have all been terrible. None of them were any good in the NFL. Nick Saban is a part of that coaching tree. He was abysmal in the NFL as head coach in the Miami Dolphins. Now, he's arguably the greatest head coach in the history of college football, but in the NFL, he was an unmitigated failure. There's no question about that. All these guys that coached under Belichick completely failed in the NFL as head coaches, and McDaniels is just another guy on that list. And good luck and God bless to Antonio Pierce. I hope things work out in Vegas. I hope he gets that job permanently. It's been reported that if he does do well, if he does a good job, he can potentially get that job as the head coach. That same thing did not happen for Rich Bisaccia 2 years ago when he took over for Gruden. When Gruden got fired and the Raiders made the playoffs anyway, they lost in the wild card to Cincinnati. That was the year Cincinnati got to the Super Bowl. 2021, they came up short. They lost to the Rams in Super Bowl 56. Bisaccia got fired, and a lot of people couldn't understand why. This guy took over a football team in the midst of turmoil and controversy and off-the-field things, Henry Ruggs and Gruden and his emails and everything else going on. And this guy took over that football team, galvanized that football team, and led them to the playoffs and got fired. McDaniels was then hired and brought in, and you've seen the results. A catastrophic disaster, a failure in Las Vegas. Moving on, the first game of the day on Sunday, across the pond, over in Frankfurt, Germany, the Kansas City Chiefs, your defending Super Bowl champion, Kansas City Chiefs, taking on the Miami Dolphins. Kansas City came out on top, won that football game 21-14. It was 21-0 at halftime. And the biggest knock, the biggest bugaboo about the Miami Dolphins is good football team, but they can't beat other good football teams. They don't play well against teams either on their level or above their level. The three losses this season for the Miami Dolphins: against Buffalo, against Philadelphia, and against Kansas City. The six wins, you're talking about beating down the Denver Broncos, the Patriots twice. For the most part, they're not beating good football teams. They're taking advantage of the bad football teams, but whenever they step up in weight class and got to play somebody on their level or above them, they usually, well, they always lose. They're 0-3 against good football teams. Two things stood out to me about this game. Number one, the Kansas City Chiefs defense all season long has carried that football team. And that's crazy to say. When you got Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, Andy Reid calling plays on the sideline, you would think, I mean, for so many years, the Chiefs offense has led the way in Kansas City. The defense has been pretty good, good enough to win Super Bowls, good enough to get stops when they have to, but nobody really talked about or celebrated the defense. All the headlines were typically about Mahomes, Kelce, Andy Reid, Tyreek Hill when he was there. Now he plays for Miami, played against his old team for the first time this past Sunday. It's always been about the offense in Kansas City. But right now, this season, that defense is leading the charge. They got good players over there. Chris Jones, one of my favorite players in the NFL. He's a monster. You know, I still got PTSD from Super Bowl 54. Chris Jones took that game over in the fourth quarter. Honestly, in my opinion, he should have been MVP of the game. Chris Jones was the best player on the field in Super Bowl 54. He's a monster. He's awesome. Then you talk about guys like George Karlaftis and Trent McDuffie and Nick Bolton at middle linebacker, Steve Spagnuolo as defensive coordinator. I mean, those guys are rolling right now, and they're carrying that team because the Chiefs' offense is largely anemic. Kelce, if you take him away, who else you got? Kadarius Toney really hasn't worked out so far in Kansas City. Can't catch a pass. Couldn't catch a cold outside butt-ass naked. No hands whatsoever. He got hands of stone. He's Ronnie Garvin from wrestling back in the day. Cannot catch anything. Could not catch COVID at a Trump rally. Now you're talking about Sky Moore, Isaiah Pacheco. Those guys have been mostly disappointing. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, same thing. Those guys are not making plays. They're dropping passes too. Mahomes is still making plays as a quarterback, but if your receiver doesn't catch it, then what's the point? So the Chiefs' defense is really the stars of that football team, which is crazy to say. The second thing is Miami, as I said, they can't beat good football teams. Tua Tagovailoa is a good NFL quarterback, deadly accurate, precise. However, when things break down around him, he's not the same quarterback. Everything has to be on schedule, on time, perfect, pristine, pocket, well-established, or else he can't play. He's not a guy known for his improvisational skills. And I think because of all the recent injuries, in particular the concussions in recent years, I think he plays cautiously. I'm not going to say the S word. I'm not going to accuse Tua Tagovailoa of playing scared. I'll say cautiously. And you look at his injury history, even going back to Alabama, he had a broken hip at Alabama. He had ankle surgery twice coming into the NFL. He's had concussion problems. Going back to that Thursday night game last year against Cincinnati, that scary scene where he's on the field throwing up gang signs, no control of his body, knocked out cold, taken off the field on a stretcher. Scary situation. I think because of that, he plays cautiously. Not going to say scared. Not going to use the S word, but whenever there's traffic around him in the pocket, he's not the same quarterback. He had a chance to win that game. They had the ball in their hands late in the game. Raheem Mostert, former 49er, ran wild like Hulkamania. I was having flashbacks to that 2019 NFC Championship game. Raheem Mostert won that game almost single-handedly. For one day, for one game, for one moment in time, Raheem Mostert was the greatest football player of all time. He was Gale Sayers. He was O.J. Simpson, minus the double homicide. He was Eric Dickerson, Walter Payton, Emmitt Smith, Earl Campbell, Barry Sanders, Adrian Peterson, Chris Johnson. He was all these brothers rolled up into one. For one day, the 2019 NFC Championship game against the Green Bay Packers, Raheem Mostert was the greatest football player who ever lived. And this past Sunday, in that game in Germany against Kansas City, in the second half, Raheem Mostert looked like that guy I saw in that 2019 NFC Championship game. He brought Miami back into the game single-handedly. And they're putting together a drive late in the fourth quarter. Raheem Mostert getting some big runs. And Miami's going down the field. But now Tua has to throw. Wildly inaccurate. horribly inaccurate, terrible throws, poor decisions, and then it all culminated in a fumbled snap on fourth down with the game on the line, fumbled the ball, went backwards, game is over, and you lose 21-14. That was a pitiful performance by Tua Tagovailoa this past Sunday, and if Miami is going to be a serious contender, if they're going to beat Kansas City, Baltimore, Cincinnati, the elite upper echelon teams in the AFC, your quarterback absolutely has to be better than that. Look at that final drive. He had a play trying to throw across his body late to Raheem Mostert that nearly got picked off. Should have been a pick six going the opposite way. He got lucky on that one. Tried to hit a slant over the middle, missed on that one. And then the most egregious miss, Cedric Wilson, the loneliest man in Frankfurt, Germany, wide ass open, and Tua completely missed him. Can't do that. Cannot have that. Especially against a team like Kansas City. You got a chance to beat the Chiefs. Take that chance. Beat them. Finish the game. Close the door. Put that final nail in the coffin. You got to make plays to beat a world champion football team like the Kansas City Chiefs. You can't give them extra opportunities. You can't miss on your opportunities. And that's what Tua did frequently in that game this past Sunday. An awful, terrible, dreadful performance by Tua Tagovailoa. He has to be better than that. Now, let's talk about a quarterback who didn't miss very often last Sunday. The best quarterback performance of the week. Rookie quarterback from The Ohio State University. The only good NFL quarterback that The Ohio State has ever produced. My man, CJ Stroud. And I swear, I sat here on this podcast, on one of these a couple of podcasts, I told people, I told the entire world, CJ Stroud should have been the number one overall pick in the 2023 NFL draft. I told people going into that draft, Bryce Young is a nice quarterback, a very good quarterback, had a lot of success in college at the University of Alabama. At the end of the day, going into the NFL, grown men, he's not even full grown. He's too small. He's about 5'9 on a good day, 5'10. He might weigh a buck 85, a buck 90. You can't win with a quarterback like that. He's too small. I don't like short quarterbacks. And people can say, well, what about Russell Wilson? What about Drew Brees? Those guys are short and diminutive in stature, petite quarterbacks, but they're stockier, they're broad-shouldered, they're bigger guys. You know, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, bigger guys physically. Bryce Young is not that big of a guy. Not only is he short, he's also small and skinny. He's about, like I said, 5'10", a buck 85, a buck 90 on a good day. At the combine, he weighed in at about 190, 195. That's the combine. You had about 2.5, 3 months to get ready for that. I'm curious to know what is his current weight right now, his walk-around weight during the season. It's more than likely not a buck 95. It's probably about 180, 185. And a quarterback like that, too small. That's why the prototypical ideal quarterback is about 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". CJ Stroud, 6'3". And to me, the arm talent that he has, his ability to process, and the way I saw him play against good football teams, namely the Georgia Bulldogs in the Sugar Bowl last season, that sold me right then and there. That told me this guy's good enough and has what it takes to be in the NFL and play at a high level. Because let's be honest, Georgia, Alabama schools like that, Ohio State too, they're pretty much minor league NFL football teams. They play in college, but they got a lot of guys on their team that are going to be in the NFL. There's a lot of Georgia Bulldogs, a lot of guys from Alabama, a lot of Buckeyes scattered all over the NFL, both sides of the ball, multiple positions. It is what it is. These schools are football factories, and CJ Stroud is a product of that, a byproduct of that. But to me, he was always the number one pick in the draft. He was always the guy I would have taken if I was the Carolina Panthers. Houston took him number two, and Houston is reaping the benefits of taking CJ Stroud. He's played incredibly the majority of the season. They lost last week to Carolina, to Bryce Young. Low-scoring football game. CJ didn't play that well. Bounces back this week against Tampa Bay in a game that was more entertaining and better than I think anyone thought going into it. That early 1 o'clock window had some great football games that no one really expected anything out of. I mean, just look at the quarterback matchups. The majority of those games, you're talking about Arizona versus Cleveland. Clayton Tune started at quarterback for Arizona, and it got shut out 27-0, obviously. A quarterback like that going up against the number one defense in the NFL on the road, first ever career NFL start, that's what's 27-0 is going to happen. You're talking about Minnesota and Atlanta, Josh Dobbs, who I'll talk about in a little bit, versus Taylor Heinicke. These quarterback matchups were all over the place. Raiders and Giants, Aiden O'Connell versus Daniel Jones, who unfortunately tore an ACL, out for the rest of the season. But there were some weird quarterback matchups going into this week in the NFL, and some games that on paper didn't appear to be that interesting. But in the words of the great, the legendary Chris Berman, that's why they play the games. And CJ Stroud, 30 of 42, 470, 5 touchdowns, no picks. I'll take that. All day, every day, twice on Sunday. Sign me up for more of that. Those are Madden numbers. You do that in a video game. He did this in real life against other grown adult men in a real professional football game. 30 of 42, 470, 5 touchdowns, no picks, no fumbles. CJ Stroud, sir, have yourself a day. He's amazing. He was awesome. And clearly the front runner to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Outstanding football from CJ Stroud. I'm very happy for the Houston Texans. D'Amico Ryans, former 49er defensive coordinator, first season on the job down there in Houston. They're 4-4. I don't think a lot of people are even aware of that, but the Houston Texans are 4-4. This team was garbage last season, the past couple of seasons, ever since that whole thing got blown up with Deshaun Watson and Hopkins got traded for a bag of Skittles a couple of years ago. And then, you know, the whole team, they had a playoff team, a good playoff run for a lot of years. It all got blown up. And ever since that, they've been the drizzling shits. Hence the reason they had the second pick in the draft to begin with. But now you introduce D'Amico Ryans, CJ Stroud, and you're talking about a 4-4 football team. I don't think anyone saw that coming. 500 at week 9 and could potentially make the playoffs this season. They got a realistic shot. They can make the playoffs this year. Wouldn't that be something? How about that for a turnaround? Congratulations to D'Amico Ryans, CJ Stroud, the Houston Texans, Houston Texans fans. Good work. Keep it up. Minnesota, the aforementioned Josh Dobbs, the journeyman, the well-traveled Josh Dobbs, played for like the entire league. With the amount of times that Josh Dobbs has had to relocate, you would think he was in witness protection. This guy's played for about 5 teams in the span of about 2 years, not even that long. He hasn't been in the NFL that long. He's played for about 5 teams already. And he was in Arizona, doing a pretty good job. Arizona was competitive, more so than people thought they would be. They upset Dallas. Josh Dobbs playing good football as a starter. But now Kyler Murray is coming back off a torn ACL last season. And at the same time, unfortunately, my man 1 o'clock Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles last week. Terrible news. It hurt me to see that. It hurt me to hear about the extent of the injury. Get well soon, Kirk. So he's out for the season, though, unfortunately. Life goes on. The games are still going to be played. And they initially intended to start Jaren Hall, rookie quarterback out of BYU. He gets hurt in the first quarter, concussion protocol. Here comes Josh Dobbs, who literally just got there. He was traded last week and literally didn't even know the names of his teammates. He's learning the playbook on the fly. He's learning the snap count during the game, before the game, whatever. He's trying to figure things out as he's going and figured it out well and led his team to a victory, a come-from-behind victory on the road against the Atlanta Falcons. He was awesome. Threw for 158 yards, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers. Had about 75, 80 yards rushing. A rushing touchdown on top of that. So he accounted for 3 touchdowns by himself out of nowhere, out the blue, sight unseen, doesn't know who his teammates are, doesn't know shit from apple butter, but there he is on the field leading the charge and leading the Minnesota Vikings to a victory. I thought that was the best thing I saw all week. That was awesome. I'm very happy for him. Great work. Keep up the good job. Now, moving on to Charm City, a place I'm very familiar with, Baltimore, Maryland, home of a ruggedly awesome football team, the Baltimore Ravens. That's a good goddamn football team. Baltimore is a grown adult man football team. And what I mean by that is teams that play physically, teams that line up and punch you in the mouth, teams that are tough in the trenches on both sides of the ball, teams that can run the football, teams that got that winning formula for late in the season, November, December, January, February, teams that can physically line up and decimate you. Grown adult man football teams. Baltimore, Philadelphia, on a good day when Trent Williams comes back, and Debo Samuel, San Francisco, Kansas City fits that description, Detroit fits that description. These are grown-ass adult man football teams that I got immense respect for. And here I am sitting at home 45 minutes outside of Baltimore in good old Frederick, Maryland. Baltimore, obviously the local football team playing on CBS. Here I am thinking I'm about to sit down and watch a good football game. 6-2, 7-2, Baltimore hosting 6-2 Seattle, division rival, a team I hate and don't like. First place in the NFC West going into the game, playing good football, albeit not against the best competition. And we saw what happened when Seattle stepped up in weight class. They got their monkey asses whipped. They got earth, wind, fire, and ice beaten out of them. They got thrown off a balcony, chokeslammed through a table. They got fucked up in Baltimore. Not the first time some folks got fucked up in Baltimore. Certainly won't be the last. But the Baltimore Ravens destroyed the Seattle Seahawks and left their bodies on top of Cherry Hill or floating in the Inner Harbor. They got annihilated 37-3, and it wasn't even that close. Physically dominated on both sides of the football. And this is the second time this season Baltimore's done that at home to a good quality opponent. Go back a couple of weeks ago, they took apart the Detroit Lions 38-6. Good football team. More than likely going to win the NFC North this season and make the playoffs. Detroit is a good football team. It did not appear that way when they had to line up opposite the Baltimore Ravens. They looked like a JV Pop Warner team going up against Baltimore. The same way Seattle looked this past Sunday. They got their asses kicked. No question about that. You're talking about Baltimore accumulating as a team 298 yards rushing. 298, almost 300 yards on the ground. They outgained Seattle 515-151. Some dude named Keaton Mitchell, a 5'8" undrafted rookie from East Carolina, who before this game never had an NFL carry, comes out of nowhere, puts up 138 yards and one touchdown to help Baltimore dismantle the Seattle Seahawks. That was ugly. No limit sneaker ugly. Baltimore has asserted themselves as being the team that more than likely, I won't say, how do I want to say this? They are a top three team in the AFC, and they play in a hellacious division. Every team in that division is two games above 500. Every team, if the season ended today, obviously it doesn't, but hypothetically speaking, if the 2023 NFL football season ended today, all four teams in the AFC North would qualify for the playoffs this season. Baltimore, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. A lot of you Steeler fans out there owe Mike Tomlin an apology, because somehow, some way, you guys are winning football games and currently, as of right now, in the playoffs. And so many fans, so many Steeler fans wanted Mike Tomlin fired. This guy's never had a losing season. Make a list of the best coaches in the NFL right now. He's top three. Mike Tomlin right now is a top three coach in the NFL. Andy Reid's number one, and after that, you can debate. You can talk about Tomlin. You can talk about John Harbaugh. Kyle Shanahan's in that conversation. Pete Carroll's in that conversation. Doug Peterson in Jacksonville, hell of a job down there. He had to go down there and clean up the mess left behind by Urban Meyer. He's done so tremendously and turned that team around. Playoff team a year ago. Playoff team again this season, 6-2, really good football team. Excellent, excellent football team in Jacksonville. I think Doug Peterson is a top 10 NFL head coach. Dan Campbell in Detroit, throw him in that mix as well. Zach Taylor in Cincinnati, the Bengals are good every year. Perennially, quality football team that can make a run to a Super Bowl or a conference championship game on a yearly basis. It helps when you have the second best quarterback in the NFL in Joe Burrow, and now he's healthy. But still, I think Zach Taylor does a great job. Defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo should be and will be a head coach next season for somebody. But yeah, getting back to Baltimore, I can, you know, I said a couple of weeks ago, and I jumped the gun on this. I was a little bit too hype about that 70-20 ass whooping that Miami gave to Denver. But that was in September, way back in the season. Week 9, at this juncture of the season, you start figuring things out. You start seeing who's real, who's fake, who's a contender, who's a pretender. Who do you think is going to be there in late January and potentially in February? And as I'm seeing it right now, that AFC Championship game is going to be Kansas City, let's call it what it is, the Chiefs versus either Baltimore or Cincinnati. I'm calling that right now. That AFC Championship game, more than likely at Arrowhead in Kansas City, because Mahomes has never played a road playoff game, period. He's played in 5 consecutive AFC Championship games, all in Kansas City. That AFC Championship game this season, the Chiefs versus either the Ravens or the Bengals. Now, somebody else can come out of nowhere and make a push. Don't count out Cleveland. If Deshaun Watson can find himself and get back to being who he was in the past, Cleveland can make some noise. Number one defense in the NFL. If Watson can get back to being Watson, look out for the Cleveland Browns. But more than likely, the way I see it right now, Kansas City versus either Baltimore or Cincinnati. And speaking of Cincinnati, Sunday Night Football, they beat the Buffalo Bills 24-18. Burrow, outstanding. Defense, excellent. I'll say this about Buffalo. They got to establish or at least even try to get the running game going, because they give up on it quickly. And you can't win asking your quarterback to do as much as Josh Allen is being asked to do. Not only be the star quarterback, not only make all the plays, not only score about 25, 30 points a game, because your defense is lacking due to injury primarily. You don't have Matt Milano. You don't have Tre'Davious White. Your defense is not really what you thought it was going to be before the season started. Von Miller is getting old. Let's call it what it is. You need your offense to score points, so you need 17 to be damn near perfect on a consistent basis, and he usually isn't. He'll play well. He'll play at a high level. He'll also turn the ball over. He throws a pick every game, it seems like. I think he actually does throw a pick every game. Even in games that Buffalo wins, Josh Allen throws a pick in those games. I think he's being asked to do too much. They got to get a running game established. James Cook, they just brought in Leonard Fournette, a.k.a. football's version of Robert Horry, meaning that he doesn't play well until the playoffs. For Buffalo, they got to get there first, and currently, as of right now, they're out of the playoff mix. They're on the outside looking in. So can he be playoff Lenny if you're not in the playoffs? No, it doesn't work that way. Latavius Murray, I mean, we're talking about two old running backs, and Cook is pretty good. Cook has done a decent job for them so far this season. I don't think he gets enough carries. I think they're asking Josh Allen to do too much, and you can't win football games that way. It's also going to hurt his career. It doesn't lend itself to a lot of longevity when your quarterback has to go out there and carry the ball and rush the football and do the things that he does. Now, it's not designed running plays. A lot of it is scrambling outside the pocket, trying to make something happen, but he plays a very dangerous style of football. I look at Josh Allen as being Caucasian Cam Newton, and Cam is pretty much retired. He's a podcast host nowadays. I think Cam is about 32, 33 years old. Josh Allen in his mid-20s, late-20s. How much longer can he seriously play football the way he's playing it right now? Look at Andrew Luck, another guy that played a courageous style of football, scrambling outside the pocket, taking on defenders, showing everybody how tough he is. It looks cool. It's great. It's highlight reels. It doesn't lend itself to longevity. Buffalo got to get some shit figured out. Get some guys back healthy, but unfortunately for Milano and Tre'Davious White, these are season-ending injuries. I don't know what Buffalo is going to do going forward this season, but they got to – it's imperative. They got to establish the running game, and they got to take some pressure off of Josh Allen and not ask him to be Superman on every single fucking play, because it's hard to win football games at a consistent level playing that way, and it's impossible to win a Super Bowl asking your quarterback to do literally everything. I don't see how it works. Philadelphia and Dallas, America's game of the week. NFC East division rivals, two teams that hate, loathe, and despise each other. Long history, fan bases don't like each other. Old school, classic, traditional football rivalry. Philadelphia, Dallas, Eagles, Cowboys. Great game. The game lived up to the hype. A bit of a scary moment, though, if you're an Eagles fan. Jalen Hurts took a direct shot right to his already injured knee, and you can see he was in obvious pain. Wincing stayed in the game, though, and threw for 207, two touchdowns, ran for another, led his team to a victory. Showed toughness, showed grit, determination, feistiness, testicular fortitude, as Mick Foley might say. He was excellent. I'm a Jalen Hurts fan, even though he plays for the Eagles. But I've been a fan of him ever since he was at Alabama, then transferred to Oklahoma. Black quarterback, I always support and endorse and embrace that. The biggest plays of the game all took place in the fourth quarter. Dak Prescott completes a pass to Luke Schoonmaker at the one-yard line. It initially looked like he got in. It was ruled a touchdown. But upon further review, came up a bit short. A couple of inches short. Football, as they say, is a game of inches. Tackled at the goal line, literally right at the goal line, and came up short. The ball tucked away from the goal line. Turnover on downs. Philadelphia gets possession of the ball right back. Dallas stops Philadelphia on the ensuing possession, gets the ball back, takes it down the field. They score a touchdown. Dak Prescott throws another touchdown pass. They go for two. The score now is 28-23. Dallas trying to get back in the game. Obviously, you want to go for two at this point in the game to make it 28-25 so that a field goal can either tie the game up late and force overtime. However, that does not happen for Dallas. On a two-point conversion attempt, Dak Prescott flushed out the pocket, running towards the goal line, unfortunately steps out of bounds at the two-yard line. Two-point conversion failed. Philadelphia tried really hard to lose this game. They had a fumble that they recovered. They got lucky in that regard. Had a three and out trying to run the clock out late in the fourth quarter. Gave the ball back to Dallas. Cowboys take possession of the football, drive down the field, 56 yards in penalties. They had to go 86 yards to score a touchdown that they didn't score, but still they got close. But predominantly, the majority of that drive was penalty yards, 56 yards in penalties. The Eagles tried to give this game away, tried to lose this game, and Dallas still could not win it. Dak ends up completing a pass to CeeDee Lamb, who on the day had 11 catches for a buck 91, came up 3 yards short, gets tackled at about the three-yard line. The game is over. The Eagles win. Dallas once again loses. They drop to 5-3. Philadelphia is 8-1, which means more than likely the NFC Championship game is going to take place once again for the second year in a row at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The 49ers, 5-3 right now, chasing, looking up at Philadelphia, sitting pretty at pole position, the leaders in the clubhouse at 8-1. That's a good football team. I can't hate on them. I don't care if they're in the 49ers' way. I'm a football fan. I appreciate good football, and the Eagles are a good football team. Nasty in the trenches. They closed the game out on Sunday with a lot of sacks. Josh Sweat, in particular. Terrence Steele, the Cowboys' right tackle, owes Dak Prescott an apology. He got whipped consistently down the stretch late in that game. He was a joke. He looked like Mike McGlinchey. He looked like a melanated Mike McGlinchey. The only thing missing was him being thrown as a projectile despite being a fully grown adult man, but he got abused repeatedly throughout that game, in particular in the fourth quarter. Late in the game, he was fucking terrible. Call it as I see it. Don't mince words. He was fucking terrible in the fourth quarter of that game. He lost that game. And everybody's going to blame Dak Prescott. Everybody's going to say Dak didn't do this, Dak didn't do that. Dak might have been the best player in that game. Between both teams, he might have been the best player on that field. played his ass off, played his heart out. A lot of people criticize and malign Dak Prescott. I've done that too over the years, but in this game, I got nothing to be critical for or of Dak Prescott. He was good enough and the best player on the field. His right tackle failed him, and there's only so much you can do in that situation. Philadelphia showed why they are currently the best team in the NFC and maybe right now the best team in pro football. They've shown it all season long. They can win games in a variety of ways. It's not always clean. It's not always pretty. But when it's time to make plays, when it's time to win the game, that's what they do. They figure it out, and they make big plays down the stretch. And it's typically different guys making contributions. Hurts and A.J. Brown and guys like that, they're always going to make contributions. But when you get a guy like Josh Sweat leads that team in sacks. We're talking about a team that also has Hassan Reddick on it and Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham and Jordan Davis, the big man from the University of Georgia. They got dudes in Philadelphia. They got guys that can get after it and can make big plays, impactful plays to win football games. They get it done. They just brought in Kevin Byard from Tennessee, so they got even better. As a Niner fan, I'm not ashamed or afraid to say it. I'm afraid. As a Niner fan, I'm afraid of the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know if we can beat them, and hopefully we can. Hopefully the Chase Young addition puts us back at their level, kind of, sort of. We can get our pass rush going, as I said earlier at the onset of this podcast. We're going to need it. You got to compete in the trenches to win football games, but especially against the Philadelphia Eagles, because they are nasty in the trenches. Offensively, defensively, doesn't matter. They get after it. Good football team, man. Salute and much respect. Let's talk about that. Let's finish up talking about that Monday night game. That game sucked. That game was awful. Not a good football game. There needs to be a moratorium on the Jets and Giants being allowed to participate and play in primetime football games. I understand why the Jets got so many primetime games at the beginning of the season when the schedule came out back in May. I get it. I understand. I know why. They had Aaron Rodgers. You thought Aaron Rodgers was going to be on the field. And so many people, myself included, wanted to see how Aaron Rodgers looked playing for the New York Jets. Unfortunately, this season, we only got 4 plays of Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback for the Jets. Now we're stuck watching the horrifically pathetic Zach Wilson. And I'm sorry, I said this, I made a podcast about it years ago, talking about how I want and wish the 49ers to draft Zach Wilson. I was clamoring for Zach Wilson. I was all about Zach Wilson. I bought into the hype. I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I watched the film. I watched the Pro Day on the NFL Network. The Pro Day, wow. That guy was Tom Brady at Pro Day. No defense, nobody rushing you. You're out there in T-shirt and shorts. He can make every play. I've said this about Zach over the years. He can do all the hard things. He can make spectacular plays. He can't do the easy things. He struggles trying to complete a screen pass. It's a 5-yard throw. The motherfucker's right in front of you. He struggles with little things like that. He can roll to his left and flick his wrist and fire it 70 yards down the field. He can do that. But reading defenses, going through progressions, all the nuance of playing quarterback, footwork, fundamentals, hanging in the pocket, pocket awareness, pocket presence, he can't do it. He's not good at it. He's not a good NFL quarterback. Let's call it what it is. His best game this season was a loss. They almost beat Kansas City, and so many people gave him praise for almost winning the game. He lost. They lost the football game. That's the best he can do, is almost win. Last night, 27-6 lost at home against the Los Angeles Chargers. That game last night was the worst thing I've seen on film since Sexy Red's sex tape. That game sucked, and neither offense played that well. The Chargers had a kick return for a touchdown. The defense was incredible, even though coming into the game, the Chargers had the worst pass defense in the NFL, but they shut down Zach Wilson last night. Wilson, 33 of 49, about 263, no touchdowns, no picks, but Three fumbles, two of them lost. Two fumbles in the game for Zach Wilson. The Jets offense has no pulse, no heartbeat, no energy, completely anemic. They can't walk and chew gum at the same time. They just suck. Even though they're a four-win football team, they're still in the mix. They can still make the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers talking about coming back in about 6 weeks off a torn Achilles. Must be something about that ayahuasca or whatever the fuck he does, his alternative medicine. You know, maybe more guys. Maybe Kirk Cousins, who also tore his Achilles, should go off the grid and live in the darkness in the wilderness for a month or whatever and smoke peyote and lick bullfrogs or whatever the fuck Rodgers is doing to apparently miraculously heal from a torn Achilles. He's out there in pregame throwing passes, stepping into the throws. No cast, no splints, no brace, nothing on, nothing visible anyway that you can see. He's wearing like old man orthopedic Dr. Scholl's sneakers. He's wearing the kind of sneakers that everybody's dad cuts the lawn in, out there throwing passes in pregame. But he's talking about coming back if the Jets can stay in playoff contention. I'd play him right now. I would take Aaron Rodgers off of one Achilles over Zach Wilson because Zach Wilson sucks. I tried to make excuses for him. I tried to be supportive. I liked the guy coming out of college. I was very high on Zach Wilson. I've seen enough. I've seen a lot of evidence that shows me he just doesn't have it. He's not good enough. He doesn't have what it takes mentally. That's the biggest thing, really. Physically, he can make all the throws. He can make every single throw. Different arm angles, different launch points. Physically, he can do it. Mentally, no, it's not there. It never was there. It might not ever be there. And all the guys that got compared to Patrick Mahomes, all have been failures. Like, none of those guys have really panned out or reached that potential or certainly lived up to that comparison. You go back to Spencer Rattler. He was the first guy I heard being compared to Mahomes. Same hairstyle, light-skinned, beige, waffle-colored Negroes. Kind of play the same kind of backyard style, improvisational, creative football that Mahomes plays. Spencer Rattler was not good at Oklahoma, transferred to South Carolina, still isn't very good. Wilson, another guy compared to Patrick Mahomes. Unfortunately, it hurts me a lot to say this, but Trey Lance, another guy compared to Patrick Mahomes. Didn't work, didn't pan out. I'm not sure if it ever will for him. Go down the list. Coming soon to the NFL, Caleb Williams. I don't believe in him. A lot of hype. I don't really see it. But he's another guy. He gets compared to Mahomes consistently. I just don't see it. I think it's like a kiss of death. It's a death knell for your career. It's bad luck. If you're a quarterback and you get compared to Patrick Mahomes, congratulations. You're going to be Mitchell Trubisky. You're not going to be Patrick Mahomes. You're going to be Mitch Trubisky, Blake Bortles, Sam Darnold. A disappointing early round, first round draft pick. I mean, Wilson was a second pick overall in that 2021 draft. Trevor Lawrence went first. He's having a good NFL career. He's the only one. That was a much talked about ballyhooed quarterback draft class in 2021. Let's take inventory of all those guys, those quarterbacks that went first round in that 2021 NFL draft. It's a crime scene. Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields is not good in Chicago. He's not going to be the quarterback for the Bears next season. Let's call it what it is. And then you got Michael McCorkle Jones, otherwise known as Mac Jones, who plays football as if he's been hit by a Mack truck up there in New England. Same thing, not good. His first like 7, 8, 9 games in the NFL, he played pretty well. But I think the league figured him out. Poor arm talent, can't make all the throws. Just not good. Poor decision maker, doesn't really throw with that much anticipation. Just not good. I was told, Bill Belichick, what happened to him? The Patriots are 2-7 right now. I was told that Bill Belichick was a genius, the greatest coach of all time. Bill Belichick is 81-95 in games he's coached where Tom Brady was not his quarterback. Allow me to say that again. Bill Belichick is 81-95 in games he coaches where Tom Brady is not his starting quarterback. I was told that Belichick was the reason they won all those championships, that Belichick was the guy that made it all work in New England. He was the straw that stirred the drink in New England. I was told that Tom Brady was a system quarterback. Anybody could have done that. Anybody could have played quarterback for the New England Patriots during that entire run, and they would have had the exact same success. So many people told me this, word for word, verbatim. System quarterback, benefits from a soft, weak division, not good. Belichick is the only reason they win. The defense carries them. How come Mac Jones isn't good? If that's the case, how come they're not having the same success with Mac Jones at quarterback that they had with Tom Brady at quarterback? Same coaches there. The Patriot way, what happened to all that? Robert Kraft is still there. If it's that easy, if it's so simple that anybody, any Tom, Dick, and Harry, some average fucking Joe off the street, some schlub, some guy slicing meat in a deli, can be plugged into the New England Patriots system and play quarterback and win 6 Super Bowls and dominate the NFL for 2 decades. If it's so easy, how come Mac Jones is not doing it? And how come Bill Belichick is not having the same success, the same degree of domination over the entire NFL that he enjoyed for about 20 years when he had Tom Brady? How come Mac Jones or any other quarterback for him is not doing the same thing? These are questions I need answered. These are questions I need answered. Mac Jones sucks, and so does Zach Wilson, and unfortunately, so does Trey Lance. God damn, it hurt me to say that, but he sucks. He's just not that good. Not yet. Maybe one day. Hasn't played that much football. Maybe one day it'll all come together for Trey Lance. I believe in him, but right now is not that day. He's third string in Dallas. He's not even playing. That draft class, overrated, overhyped, and has not delivered at all. Not good. And Zach Wilson, days are numbered in New York. Zach last night got sacked 8 times for 57 yards. And a lot of people might look at that, look at that number in the box score, look at the stats, without even seeing the game and say, well, goddamn, the opposing team must be really good. And they are. They got Joey Bosa. They got Khalil Mack rushing the quarterback. These guys are awesome. These guys are incredible football players. I give them credit. But there was a handful of sacks that Zach took in that game where he just held the ball too long. He's not seeing the field. Get the ball out your hands. Anticipate guys being open. It's not college anymore. Guys are not going to be wide-ass open by 5 yards. You're not going to have that degree of separation consistently in the NFL. You got to anticipate the throw. You got to anticipate that guy getting open. And Zach Wilson, in year 3, still can't do it. And Zach Wilson sucks. Let's call it what it is. He's not a good NFL quarterback. Even the games the Jets have won with him starting, they're not scoring a lot of points. It's not like it's a dynamic, explosive offense. It's not like he's out there lighting it up for 300 yards. He's not putting up C.J. Stroud numbers, that's for sure. They win games ugly. They grind it out. Defense, running game. Where the fuck was Breece Hall at last night? You got to lean on him. Put the game in the hands of Zach Wilson, and you see the results because he's just not that good. It is what it is. And with all of that being said, this concludes this edition of the Dion Gordon Podcast. Eternally grateful, always humble, and very much appreciative. And remember, at all times, tread lightly like a woodpecker with a headache. Picture me rolling. I'm out.